Cole. John C. Nash. Part of the Coffee Klatch Curmudgeon Collection. Written 2018. Audio version 2024. Last Christmas, I was at the home of some friends where some grandchildren were visiting. I've a white beard and was, on this occasion, wearing a red coat. A small girl, likely 4 years old, watched me very carefully for a long time before coming over and asking, "Are you Santa Claus?" I replied that I wasn't, but that I probably looked quite a lot like him. Then she said, "Grandpa says that we all have to be good, or else Santa will only leave us a lump of coal in our stockings." Not knowing what to say in reply, I responded, "Yes, I suppose that's what he does if children are naughty." "Is coal bad?" the little girl asked. That was a big question, of course, but I'm sure not what she was thinking. "Have you ever seen a lump of coal?" I queried. "No." "What is it?" In as simple a way as I could, I explained that coal was like soft rock that could be burned. The expression on the little girl's face showed me that she regarded this as a big fib. "Have you seen a barbecue that burns charcoal?" I asked. "Uncle Joe has one. Daddy says it's too much work. We have a gas barbecue." "Well, coal is very much like the briquettes for Uncle Joe's barbecue," I explained. "So you get it at the supermarket in a bag." I was getting in too deep here, so I said that now it wasn't sold much anymore. The arrival of some other children, cousins I think, provided a distraction, and I was quickly abandoned with my whiskey in a comfortable armchair. Where would I get a lump of coal? And would it be lignite, bituminous or the wonderful shiny, hard anthracite? Where did those memories come from? As a child of transatlantic parents, I remembered coal fires in England. The newspaper, the small sticks of kindling, careful placement of modest lumps of coal, black fingers from this of course. Then lighting the match, and, if the chimney didn't draw well, holding a newspaper over the front of the fireplace to force the draft through the bottom of the fire. Until, inevitably, the newspaper caught fire, sometimes with a spectacular sudden ignition, and had to be thrown in the fireplace to avoid setting the house alight. I was reading that paper. Someone would complain. Of course, you could cook on one side and freeze on the other with such fires. The rooms never quite warmed, with most of the heat going up the chimney. In Canada, back in the 50s, there were still coal merchants for the diminishing number of houses where the big octopus-like convection furnaces burned it. Some such houses had a coal bunker fed via a chute from the sidewalk that had a small iron cover. The coal hole. Sometimes the foil for pratfalls in silent movies. And the smoke. A particular smell. It caught me by surprise recently at an outdoor museum where there was a blacksmithing exhibit. I could smell the coal burning from a long way off, and it triggered a lot of rather fuzzy memories of places and times, but I couldn't put any events to them. Fortunately, though I was in England in December 1952, I escaped the worst of the London pea soup fog that coal smoke created, killing anywhere from 4,000 to 12,000 depending on how one attributes the fatalities. But there wasn't sufficient infrastructure for electric or gas heating. So people put up with the dirt of the coal, of the ashes, and the smoke. They had to brush off smuts from steam locomotives and sweep out coal bunkers and sheds, combining the coal dust with a bit of cement powder and molding a burnable brick in an empty sugar box. One could not afford to waste it. And keeping warm was more important than keeping clean. A Dutch woman told me her parents wanted a bigger apartment, she said, house, but to the Dutch, that means one's dwelling unit. In the post-war time of Reconstruction, housing was scarce, but an elderly brother and sister wanted the small apartment of this lady's family. Possibly the smaller apartment was located closer to where the elderly couple wanted to be. With much back and forth over some period of time, a swap was worked out. But the memory that stuck in the mind of a young girl was that the new apartment had a shower stall in the bathroom that was full of coal when they moved in. But was coal bad? I sipped my scotch and wondered, drifting off into a bit of a daydream as the buzz of the party washed around me. Was coal bad? If you were a miner who got crushed or got black lung, then yep. Pretty bad. If you lived near a coal-fired power station, the ash was more radioactive than the waste from a nuclear reactor, and when Con Ed stopped using coal for electric generation, New York's air got a lot less radioactive. Those living near the Mackenzie River, of course, are sometimes losing the land beneath their feet as the permafrost melts from global warming. On the other hand, coal fires let people keep warm in winter, especially in Britain during the Industrial Revolution after the forests were cut down. The Christmas entertainment, Round About Our Coal Fire, from 1730 suggests a coal fire was an attractive idea. Richard Bride published a dance by the same title in 1766, stealing a variation on a tune, Old Simon the King, to provide the music. Today, we don't heat houses that way, but we couldn't make modern metals, particularly steels, without coal. And there are lots of chemicals that come from coal that would be hard to make otherwise. The little girl came back into the room and walked over to me. Mommy says that you're going to hand out some presents. She said you were Santa Claus's brother. Well, a bit of fiction I would go along with. As I got up, I noticed the little girl's eyes. They were black. Black as coal. Cover image. File name subbituminous.jpg from Wikimedia Commons, licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 4.0 International License. Uploaded by geos.barau from own work. A sample of Round About Our Coal Fire. Bare Necessities, from their album Favorites from the Boston Center, Volume 1.